KBPS on PRP, student radio for the city of Portland. Joe Anderson here, your host. Thanks for tuning in. Join me as we hear from students across the Portland Public School District, powered by AM 1450 KBPS Portland. For 100 years, KBPS has been the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Brought to you by Portland Radio Project, KPRP LP Portland, your nonprofit community radio station. This is KBPS on PRP.
Hello, KBPS. This is Travis, and today I'm going to interview one of my favorite English teachers, Mr. Huntington. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So, is it okay if I can tell you some things about like your teacher life, if that's okay?
You're going to tell me? I can't wait.
What inspired you to become an English teacher, and what passionates you to be about that profession?
The passion that I have for my profession. Well, so English is obviously the best of all of the different disciplines, naturally. But I always loved the storytelling aspect of English. You know, if you sort of think about like, what do people do that no other species does well on the face of the earth? You know, it's not running or jumping. It's like storytelling. And that's kind of the thing that we do well and better than everyone else. And it's just been really fun to have a career where I get to focus on that all the time.
Okay. My second question is, how do you approach designing lesson plans and creating assignments that engage your students and help them achieve their learning goals?
Man, how do I approach? That is a huge question. Do you have like an hour? I could talk forever. It is literally the most complicated part of teaching, because the thing that they don't tell you about learning, well, maybe it's obvious, is just that like you don't make one lesson plan. You make one lesson plan that has many, many different ways to get into that lesson plan. So you sort of have to have like a little bit of something for everybody to get through like a 90 minute. You're planning, it's like you're planning a party that everyone has to come to, and you're trying to find at least something that people can be excited about in that time. So it's like, you know, you have to have speaking, you have to have like some community building, you have to have some times for people to like move around a little bit, you have to have some time for people to write, you have to do a lot of different things in 90 minutes. And the only way that you can really be successful in building these lessons is you got to know your kids, and you got to like get to know them and get to figure out what they're good at and what they're working on and what they're proud of. And you just sort of have to reflect that back onto the young people in the room. And what's crazy is that like period two might be totally different than period three. And so you have to have a lesson that's flexible enough to capture both those groups. And I think that is ultimately why, I mean, you mentioned earlier what makes me passionate about teaching. It's so interesting and so complicated to build these sort of multifaceted, flexible lessons that at the end of the day, you're still teaching the same things, but you have to sort of be so quick on your feet. So it's just, I don't know. One of the reasons why I love teaching is because it's like being inside of a giant human puzzle, if that makes sense, like a puzzle around human ideas all day long. And it wears me out, but in the best way.
I've also heard that like, if you're a teacher, you kind of expect that you're not getting as paid as much as you should, but it's more of a calling. Is that true?
No. Well, yes and no. Let me say like this. I do feel like it's a calling. Like, I do feel that I am like compensated, if that makes sense, for my work in ways that don't have to do with money. Like, I feel like when I think about like, what's my purpose on this planet? I feel good about that, answering that question. I feel like I'm doing what I should be doing. And if somebody like were to walk up to me with a big check and say, do you feel like you deserve more money? I would say, yes, thank you. I will take that money. But I do feel like this idea of like, you have to take a vow of poverty, and that like, you know, you can't do anything because your bank account's always drawn out. For me, that's not true. And like, you know, my family, we're both educators in my family, And, you know, some of it is that we've been doing it for a little bit. And so every year your pay goes up. And also we both have the most amount of education that you can get. And so every time you pass a class or you get an extra degree, you get more money. So some of it's that, but at the end of the day, it's like I feel good about what we earn. And you have to also understand that, like, it's only for 10 months out of the year. Like, we don't get paid for the summer months. So if you sort of factor that in, the fact that, like, you know, if you were to sort of mathematically, like, keep multiplying what I would have paid if I were a year-long salary, then it would be a very good salary. Does that make sense? So I come back to this idea of, yeah, I'll take more money, and yeah, I think I deserve it, but that is this idea, at least in Oregon, that teachers are just barely making by. For me personally, that's not true. Now, of course, everyone, it's different, and everyone has different situations and different demands, and, you know, the pay scale is all very complicated, but I don't know. That's what I'd say about that. It's sort of like yes to all of the parts of your question.
That's good to know. So also for now going on to my third question, how do you handle challenging situations in the classroom, such as like a student struggling or understand a concept or acting out in class? Like if they don't understand a subject, like sometimes they feel like cheating using a AI called ChatGPT, like using those for your assignments and then turning it in, and then you're like going, oh, I'm not going to go through every, like, you have so many kids. I'm thinking, what, 200 maybe, or 100 even at most, just like going through assignments and making sure things are spelled right or something. You could add a little quote, even like a sentence for every student for every day you teach for during the weekends. I feel like that would stress you. Like, does GPT, ChatGPT, like that AI, does that like help with the development of what you're teaching?
Like, do I use the chatbots, or do I think about the chatbots being used by students?
Chatbot used by students, them having situations of not being able to, like, type it up themselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your question is super interesting because English is at a crossroads. I sometimes wonder if it's the crossroads that was at the, that math felt like that they were in when the graphing calculators became sort of like everywhere, and, you know, and certainly like the pocket computing powers of a calculator have gone through the roof. And so I'm sure at some point math teachers were looking around being like, what are we teaching now? Because they now have a calculator that can do all the complex computations that, you know, they can just plug it into the calculator. And now English is having that same moment where it's like, okay, what are we teaching? Like, kids can just plug in a prompt into a chat bot and get an essay and then turn it in. Now, two things. I mean, first is that if you have read the same story as the kid has read and they put it into a chat box, you know when they're using a chat bot. You know, it's just like, it's actually really clear when it's just like, it's just a little bit off base, a little bit not quite right. And if you follow any of the links, they don't work. The other thing that makes it kind of not that easy to chat cheat is that if you know your kid's writing, a lot of times you sort of know, like, if suddenly this incredibly complicated, you know, essay shows up and you know that's not something that the student has done before, then you sort of, that's a little red flag. But to your point, it's sort of like, you know, how do I not get stressed out about it? You have to remember that, like, I don't teach English. I teach students who are learning English, if that makes sense. And the difference there is that it allows me to remind myself that when kids make a mistake, like, my subject matter doesn't matter so much as like my students matter. And so when a kid makes a mistake, like trying to pass off something that's not theirs, or like panicking over over getting an assignment in, or like you mentioned, like, just the huge amount of grading in English, like, it's really true. Like, every time you assign an essay as an English teacher, you can expect between 5 and 10 hours of grading for a stack of essays, which is just, you know, once you grade it, make comments, enter it into the grade book, you know, do all of that bookkeeping, it's a huge amount of extra work on the back end. And the thing that kind of keeps me fresh about all of this is to remind myself that, like, I don't care about the essay. I care about the student who wrote the essay. And I'm using the piece of writing in front of us to move the student forward. And that just allows me to have, you know, grace for the student if they're struggling. And it reminds me to, like, give comments that are, like, humane and useful, as opposed to just sort of, like, taking out a red pen and slashing up some kid's writing, you know. It's like, I would never do that because I don't care about the essay that they've turned in. I mean, I do, but, like, I care more about the human who wrote the essay behind it.
You would be way too nice to do it anyway, to slash somebody's, just like, get out of here, do this assignment again. Like, you're too nice to do that, Huntington.
No, I've always dreamt about it, though.
That just leads into my fourth question, is, like, what strategies do you use to, like, keep it up? And just aside from that, how long does it take for an average student in your class? How long does it take to write in a comment, put in a grade, and then go to the next?
Per student? If I'm really crushing it, I'd say 10 minutes per essay. If you were, like, to, like, read it, think about what that student needs to hear, making a comment, and then filling out the rubric, and then getting those numerical scores into Synergy, and then getting it all back to the student. It's all digital right now. It's kind of exciting. I've been experimenting this year as a way to get better feedback to kids that's easier for me, but also, like, easier for kids to use. And I've started making videos for feedback. So I'll read an essay and I'll fill out the rubric that is connected to it. And then I'll just, instead of, like, writing comments and getting the words just right and typing things out and correcting my own spelling, I'll just click on a video and I'll talk about what I'm noticing in the essay as if the kid was right there. And I have to say that not only is it, like, faster for me, but it's also, like, there's a way in which, like, kids will stop me in the hall and be like, I got your video. You good point on point two. Point three was, like, you know, a little bit off base, I think. And I'm, like, sitting here looking at him being like, you know, I've made 50 videos yesterday. Like, I can't remember that exact one. But it clearly means that the feedback is much better when it's used video. So sort of, like, to your other question about, like, the role of technology and in the English class, I think we're at a really exciting moment. And right now, English teachers are terrified because we're worried that the bots are coming for us and that they're going to replace us and the kids will turn in automated essays and we'll just run them through a chatbot machine and give them automated feedback and then we'll just sit around and slowly die. And that's not going to happen. But we are in a moment of flux where technology is really going to change the process of writing. I mean, I don't know, go back however many hundreds of years and talk about the English teachers who were dealing with, like, the Gutenberg press. You know what I mean? Like, when people went to printing presses, that changed writing. It changed what was possible. It changed how people thought about writing. We're in that exact same moment right now with AI and technology and the many different ways to write. And ultimately, at the end of it, I think we're going to come out exactly where we were before, which is that writing is about thinking. And thinking is always good. And so we just have to make sure that we emphasize that.
I'm out of words of what you said. That's amazing.
Thank you. I often feel that I'm amazing as well.
And I understand English teachers are going through the roughest time because I've seen videos of college teachers being so mad to the point where they're saying, I need a 500-word essay by tomorrow because they're so mad at GPT. Have you ever heard about the new GPT, GPT-4?
No.
So what I've heard from it is a more advanced GPT, like AI bot, mm-hmm. that it would, for the regular one, it would only pass about 60% in classes. This one came now pass 80% of assignments, can clear it up more and it looks more humane.
Wild.
Like, it doesn't seem like it's more of like an automated text. It looks too human to be real, which,
you know, I just like, It's interesting because it's like what this is going to mean for English teachers is that we just are going to change how we assess things. So we'll go to in-person discussions. We'll go to group projects. We'll go to handwriting. Boom. Handwriting. You know what I mean? So it's like when I was a kid in college, this is like, you know, we had computers, but a lot of our exams were still sort of older fashioned. And we had these things called blue books, and they were blue. And we sat down with the blue book and they said, start writing. And we would write in the blue book. And, you know, there's like, we'll just go back to that. I mean, it's sort of like there's so many different ways to get an idea of what someone knows. And what those angry professors are responding to is that they have to change their ways. But once they do, they might find that they like, you know, the essay, the sort of the traditional essay of like, go home and write me an essay. That's just one way of assessing human knowledge. And I don't know, it's like, maybe we don't need to rely on that so heavily because we have been in the past. And then I was also going to say, it's like the English teacher isn't the only one who should be worried. Like, think about what a human sounding AI writing program can do. And think of all the jobs that replaces, you know, it's going to replace, lawyers. You know, think about a contract that can be written up automatically. And right now you got to go into a law office and pay hundreds of dollars per minute for an expert to write up a contract. But, you know, that could be automated in a lot of ways. I'm not saying that lawyers completely are useless, but like one aspect of that job is replaceable. Think about like, I don't know, just all of the content that's on the internet that right now somebody's writing and that's their job. And that could be automated in the future. I mean, so it's not just going to be the English teacher that is going to be disrupted by this technology. We're just on TikTok first complaining about it.
TikTok, TikTok, TikTok. Everybody be watching it all the time, including me. And I would say I would do it in your class, and I'm very sorry about it, but it's one of
you
those.
You watch TikTok in my class?
Oh, when you're not looking.
Damn it. Can I say that on radio?
I can bleep it.
Beep.
For number five, what would you call a successful class, like classier as like the qualities of success, like good grades, maybe like students getting something out of it and then using that writing in the future? Like, what does success look to you for the students that you are teaching?
Yeah, I mean, I don't care as much about the grades. I feel like the grades are a really important and necessary part of school. It's sort of like the money of school. And I would love to live in a world where we were beyond that, but we're not. I want my class to be like, first off, I just wanted to be like comfortable. Like, I want kids to just be like, oh yeah, I'll go to that class and just sort of feel good. And then I want people to walk out of that class with like, I got these skills that are useful. And, I don't know, every year there's like usually like one or two kids that it's like the highest compliment that I can get. Cause here's the thing about Benson. Nobody comes to Benson for English, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no one's like, oh, I heard there's this 10th grade and 11th grade English teacher at Benson, and I'm just going to cross the city every single day so I can go to his English class. No, nobody does that. So for me, the highest compliment for an English class is a kid is like, yeah, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And I'm like, ha, that's when I know that I've got him.
I've got one more question for you, Huntington. Did you know this whole interview questions was written by ChatGPT?
No way!
Yes.
Really?
Yes, it was all written by ChatGPT.
Wow, you blew my mind. Well, I mean, you bring up this. So this is a perfect point here, which is like the thinking that went into this piece is not generating a question. It's like, it's the fact that you were conducting an interview. You were like engaged. You were responding. Like, you were picking up details that, and like going back and circling back to different ideas. So it's like in some ways this, you have demonstrated a little bit of what the future could be for writing, which is that the chatbot creates kind of a container, and then the human goes into that container and makes sure that it's expressing themselves exactly the way that they want. And they're the one like doing the thinking, so to speak. It's just assisted by a bot. Now, if I were a chat, like if I was like a radio voice, a computer voice responding to these questions and no humans were involved, then we might as well go kill ourselves because that's the end of the human civilization.
Well, thank you, Huntington.
On that note.
But thank you, Huntington. Honestly, this was also my mom's idea to use ChatGPT my interview.
Cruel. I love it. It's so good.
To interview you. But honestly, it was great interviewing you. And I like hearing your questions about just how you do your job. And I understand as a teacher, It can be very rough to go through every student, make sure everything is clear, and then when kids don't do their assignment, they do it like last minute. And I feel like, tell me if I'm wrong, you, like the last minute students, like on the weekends, you're the most busiest person that last week of school.
All those procrastinators?
Yes.
No, I don't. I mean, like, I don't love it. It's sad because, like, I see the work that's coming across, and it's not up to the full potential of those kids, but it doesn't stress me out now.
Okay. Well, Huntington, thank you so much. And this is KBPS coming from Travis Keller.
Oh, one last thing. I'm actually a robot.
No, you're not.
My name is Zip, and I have an interview for you with the Benson paraeducator, Chris Neal. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Zip. Thank you.
I found from my teacher, Mr. Patterson, I found out that you are going to the fish shows this weekend.
Yeah, I sure am. I'm super excited. I woke up on Monday with the feeling of I get to see fish this weekend. And
I actually woke up with the same thing. I'm going as well. My parents have been listening to fish ever since I was born, going to it for years and years. I went when I was younger, but this is my first time actually going willingly. And when they told me, hey, this is happening, do you want to go? I said, I don't know yet, let me decide. And I came back and said no, actually, at first, because I thought I was going to be like really busy and stuff, because I would have to skip Friday for school. But then my dad bought me a ticket anyways and didn't tell me. And later on, I went back and said, I changed my mind, I do want to go. Is there still a chance? And he said, I saw that coming. I already bought you a ticket.
Oh, I love that story. I have a 13-year-old son and almost 2-year-old daughter. My daughter has not seen fish yet, but my son has been to 4 fish shows.
Nice.
His first two when he was 5 years old, and then he went almost 2 years ago, and I took him to Vegas. Then he went to 2 out of the 4 shows in Vegas.
I'm pretty sure my parents went to the Vegas show, but I did not go.
Yeah, love going to Vegas shows. I've seen 4 different Vegas runs across the time now.
Yeah. Most of the time when my parents go, it's in Atlantic City because my grandparents live there. So they drop me and my sister off at my grandparents for a couple days while they go and party at the fish shows.
Yeah, I have that same technique except in Illinois. I'm from Illinois, so I'll go back there, drop off kids, and go to either the Alpine Valley in Wisconsin or to Northern Island in Chicago.
Yeah. I know that I've been to at least 2 fish shows, maybe 3, most of it before I can remember, but I remember the last one that I went to was probably when I was like 6 or 7, and it was at the Gorge.
Awesome. What'd you think of the Gorge?
I don't remember very much of it. I have 2 distinct memories. I remember that it was like giant rocky stairs, a lot of it.
Yep.
And we put up our blanket right next to, I think it was a cell tower. It was some kind of tower that looked like a cell tower.
Did you think it was hot?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I have not taken my son to the Gorge. I mean, it's out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
There's no trees out there. It's super hot during the day. And I always feel like I may not make it myself. I don't know if I could keep another human alive and myself.
Yeah. I know that I also went to some String Cheese Incident concerts when I was younger. I went to more of those than I did fish, but I remember those even less.
Yeah, I've seen probably almost 70 Cheese concerts, too. When the 4-year gap where Fish wasn't a band, I saw a bunch of String Cheese concerts.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love live music, and Fish is my favorite rendition of live music.
Yeah, lately, for about a year now, I've started to get more and more into live music because, you know, my parents pushed it in my face, to put it simply. And then all of a sudden, there's just a snapping point. I didn't even notice it. All of a sudden, I was like, why? I want to go to shows with you guys. The moment where they realized is, there was a Cake concert in town, and they said, oh, hey, we just got back from the Cake concert. And I was like, wait, what? There was a Cake concert and you didn't take me? Because they've been playing it for me and I started listening to it on my own and they didn't know that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I took my parents to see Phish a little backwards. They weren't into going to live music. So in 2016, at a different Vegas run, that's the year that Phish covered David Bowie. My parents were actually there. They live in Phoenix. They were randomly going to be there to go see Elton John in concert. About a month before the concert, I found out that they were going to be there. I was like, holy cow, I'm going to be there at the same time. You guys should come to a Phish concert while you're there. And at first, they didn't want to, but I talked them into it, and it blew their minds. And they still talk about it to this day. They will go see Phish again.
Yeah, I remember I saw a documentary on YouTube. It was about an hour and a half, but it was called Taking My Parents to Burning Man. And they were not hipsters. They've never been in that scene, and their son was about 21 and went to every single show and was a DJ. And it was focused on the parents' experience going to, you know, Burning Man.
Yeah.
And after the fact, when it showed like how they were after a year later, they were hanging out with all of the friends that they made at the shows. Their house was completely different, with cool art and psychedelic tarps and other cool stuff like that. And they were already planning on going to the next one.
It's a life-changing experience. I love
it. I'm really excited for it. The year that I get out of school, because it happens in August, which is like around the start of school, so I can't go, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But as soon as I get out of school, I'm going to go there for my first year. My parents are going to go there. They don't go every year. They haven't since I was born, but they want to be there for my first year.
That's awesome. I'm excited for you.
Well, anyways, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you, Zip.
Yeah, this was Zip with KBBS.
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click the big red heart.
Okay, well, first off, can you state your name and your job?
Sure. I'm Jane DeSimone. I'm a talent acquisition business partner at Portland General Electric.
Okay, great. And what responsibilities does your job entail?
I find and engage future employees so that we can come to work at PGE. We try to get the most talented people to fill the jobs that we have at Portland General Electric.
Is there any specific education required for your job?
Most of the folks that have my job have a bachelor's degree, although you can also do this job with less education than that. Lots of folks do. A lot of what's required for this job is the ability to talk with people. You have to have some analytical skills. That's generally what's required.
What's your least favorite thing and your most favorite thing about your work?
My most favorite thing is I get a charge out of helping people to begin or grow their careers and building strong teams of folks at PGE to do the work and execute against our mission of sustainability and decarbonization. So that's very exciting. Least favorite thing is very personal. I do not like long meetings. That's all. Yeah, I just am not a fan of long meetings because usually you can accomplish as much in a short meeting.
Okay, what are your hours typically? Is it like a 9-to-5 or do you have to put some extra time in?
In recruitment, we have to be able to talk to candidates, sometimes at non-standard hours if they're already working. So sometimes we work after 5 and sometimes we work before 7 and sometimes we work on weekends. So yes, we do work beyond the normal 9-to-5 day, but the core of our day is 9-to-5.
That's all the questions I can think of. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.
It was nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
Hey, what's up? I'm Redding, and I'm here with
Kayvon.
And today for our PRP on KBPS, we are going to be talking about the NBA playoffs and specifically our predictions. And then at the end, we'll go over the MVP race. Correct. Yep. First, we'll start off in the Eastern Conference, where it's pretty much the only it's set, I would say, except for maybe the Cleveland and Philadelphia. That's about it. Going from 3-4, 4-3, depending on where what you look at it. You got Milwaukee at 1, Boston at 2, Philadelphia 3, Cleveland 4, New York 5, Brooklyn 6, Miami 7th, Atlanta 8th, 9th Toronto, and 10th Chicago. So what are your thoughts so far, Kayvon, on that?
I think the Bucks are going to take it all the way, Chris Middleton's back. Drew Holiday is playing like he's one of the best point guards in the East, if not the best point guard in the East. And then, you have Superman, a.k.a. Giannis. I think they're going to go through the East. They're going to have struggles, obviously, with, Philadelphia and Boston. But I honestly see them in the finals and Giannis lifting up the trophy for his second ring. And if there were to be an upset, I would say the Heat would be the ones to make that upset happen. They're a good defensive team. They're not great at shooting, but, their defense is just so great. And Jimmy Butler, when it's playoff time, he really shows up and shows out. So what do you think?
I agree with a lot of things you said, actually, especially with Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee's, Boston's good, Philly's good, Cleveland's good, Miami's good. I don't really think New York or Brooklyn stand a chance in this playoff run. New York probably will, maybe next year or 2 years, who knows. They got a decent, young, good team. But like you said, with Middleton back, Holiday, Brook Lopez is playing like an absolute beast on defense. Probably his best season since he was in Brooklyn by far. So I would have to say probably Milwaukee will come out on top in the East. And then what you said about Miami's a good point. They actually beat Philadelphia last night, and not even really a close game. With a fully healthy Miami team is just good.
Yeah.
Adebayo, Hero, Butler. They're just great players. Even Lowry, when he's healthy, plays great. So, even though he's old.
Yeah, and they're well coached too.
Eric Spoelstra is a great coach.
He's a great coach.
I don't see any of these other teams really in the play-in doing that well. So, Chicago, too injured, and Toronto, mid, and then Atlanta's Atlanta. So.
Yeah. Drew Holiday is better than Trae Young, I would say that.
Drew Holiday is good. All-star season this year. Some people think he doesn't deserve it, but I think he's made a strong case this second half of the season for sure.
Definitely. He's the best defender in the league, in my opinion.
I 100% agree.
He's the best defender in the league. And then offensively, he's still giving you great numbers. I mean,
remember, I think it was 4 years ago when it was Pelicans Blazers and Drew Holiday just clamped up Lillard and McCollum and they swept them so easily. That was that team. I thought that team would have won if Cousins didn't get injured. That team was good. And then now we'll move on to the West here with all over the place here in the West. There's not a single team that really stands at their seed except Denver, Memphis, and Sacramento. 1, 2, 3. Denver, Memphis, Sacramento, in that order. And then after that, it's almost a free for all. With these teams. After that, you got 4th is Phoenix, 5th is the Clippers, 6th Golden State. The Lakers are actually one game behind the Warriors with the 41 wins to 42 wins, so they could actually make it in the playoffs without having to go through that play-in. And then you got New Orleans at 8, Minnesota 9, and OKC 10. And then Dallas with a chance if they can win their next couple games and OKC loses, which I hope not. That would kind of suck. Plus, not a fan of Kyrie Irving. I'll say it. I'll admit it. Kind of a toxic player in my mind. What are your thoughts on the West, Kayvon?
It feels like we're reliving March Madness again.
For real.
The West is absolutely crazy. Honestly, I think the Nuggets aren't that great of a one seed, personally. Offensively, they're pretty good. Jokic is great. Jamal Murray's been balling. Michael Porter Jr., Michael never swung the rock. Porter, he's amazing. But defensively, I have worries about them. The Grizzlies, it just so much depends on – like what they want to do. You know, they're a good team for sure, but you know, they're kind of young, you know.
Yep.
And you know, however John Morant is feeling that day is how they're going to play. The Kings, I like the Kings. I like De'Aaron Fox. I like Sabonis. But, you know, they're young. This is their first time that they've been in the playoffs. I don't expect much from them. Even though the Warriors are a lower seed than we're accustomed to, I still think they're a very good team, you know. Steph Curry is going to be Steph Curry.
For sure.
You know, Klay Thompson, he's going to be Klay Thompson. Draymond Green, he's going to bring the energy defensively, so... Even though they're a lower seed than we're usually accustomed to, I think they'll be all right. And the Lakers, it's just if Anthony Davis is healthy and available, they can make a finals run or they can be a first-round exit.
Yep.
It all depends on how healthy Anthony Davis is. And for OKC, I really want to see them make the playoffs, you know. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's one of my favorite players in the league. OKC is one of my favorite teams in the league, you know. They're such a young team, you know, a lot of energy.
Yep.
And it would just be great to see them get at least a first-round win. What do you think?
Again, I think I agree with a lot of things you say. And I guess one thing I'll pull out is the injuries, you know, and teams being healthy. Because I feel like more than the East, the West has definitely struggled with more injuries, I feel like. Or just players being gone, like John Morant was gone, you know. Jokic sat out for these last couple weeks. I feel like the healthiest team maybe in the West is Sacramento. They haven't really lost many guys throughout this year. Phoenix, you know, they lost Kevin Durant when they just got him.
Yeah.
Clippers, you know, you just never know with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a team that could surprise people if those two are very healthy.
Yeah, they're a pretty good team.
Yeah. And then Golden State, you know, I'm tired of them. But they're bound to make a run. And my two favorite teams in the West are probably Denver and Sacramento, and they're probably going to get two tough, probably first-round matchups, depending on who comes out of that those play-in games. If Golden State drops, for sure, even. Because Denver just can't match up against Golden State. It's not good. Even though they got some defensive players in KCP and Bruce Brown, but I don't think it's possible if that was the case. Who's my favorite team though coming out of the West?
Man,
I that's a tough call. Just like you said, March Madness. Don't know. Yeah. A thing I would like to see though is Minnesota to like maybe jump up to that 8 or 7 and play Memphis in that 2-7 game because those two teams go at it, and it's always a fun series to watch. And with Kat healthy and Edwards healthy and Gobert healthy. It could be a fun one to watch, even though they lost Vanderbilt and Russell, but it could be close. I don't know. It's tough. You got anything? You got anything on the West?
I'm going to bet that AD's healthy. I'm saying the Lakers are going to go to the finals.
Okay.
I'm going to put my AD.
I like it. I'm just going to go with, just based off of my favorite team, I'm just going to go to Denver.
Okay.
That's just my team, but... I think no matter what, the East will come out on top, probably Milwaukee. Yeah. That's my guess. Milwaukee's just such a dominant team.
Yeah, exactly. They have Superman.
Yeah, literally. We'll get to that next, we'll just actually transition right into that now with the MVP since we've made our predictions there. Right now, I think it's Embiid is 1. He jumped the ladder. And then Jokic 2, Giannis 3. And then, which a lot of people actually... don't know, Sabonis is 4.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So what are your thoughts on that? Who do you think might come out on top, and what surprises you the most, I guess?
Me personally, I'm surprised that Jokic isn't 1. I feel like even though Embiid is more like dominant, I just think Jokic is better. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But if it was all up to me, I think Giannis would win every single year. If it was really up to me, I think Giannis would win every single year. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
He's just an amazing player. He kind of reminds me how LeBron used to dominate back in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not the same type of way, but
yeah.
Like, I just think he should win every year until, you know, he's old. That's
for
not
sure. I mean, he doesn't slow down. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So you say Giannis. I like that. I'm with that for sure. You know, I have the biasness towards Jokic with him being my favorite player and favorite team and all, but it's just, for me, it's one of those things. The MVP is just so weird in how they label it and how they want to discuss about it, especially when they talk about, like what player impacts their team the most, you know? And right now, those two players are Jokic and Giannis.
Yeah.
With them both being in the one seed, both having the best records in the league with 1 and 2. Well, actually, I take that back. Denver's, like, the third best record. But, I mean, Milwaukee's got 58 wins, and the next closest is Boston with 55, which is still good. But, I mean, you look at Giannis' stats and everything, and he should probably win it, you know? And then going off of the Sabonis thing, I think that's crazy to think about. He's averaging almost a triple-double, I think, too, which is crazy.
Yeah, he's an amazing player.
Yeah. And I think that's another thing where, like, Sacramento was bottom of the league last year.
Yeah.
And now they're top three. So I feel like that also should make a case for that, for Sabonis being the MVP. But I get it, you know, he's small market teams. They don't really hand out MVPs that much to a small market team. So it's going to be a weird one. Playoffs and MVP race. For sure. Rookie of the year pretty much went to Paolo, I think.
Yeah, I don't think there's much even to though take there.
Personally, I think it should be Jalen Williams. That's my guy.
I do like Jalen Williams.
That's my guy.
I do like Jalen Williams.
And then defense player of the year looks like it's going to Jaren Jackson Jr., I think, is what it was. And then I think it should be Brooke Lopez, but I mean, they both average good enough blocks and steals, but the thing with Memphis is they were saying at the beginning of the year, Jaren Jackson, they were padding his stats. Did you hear about that on the stat keeper? So that's I don't know how that worked out. That's funny. But yeah, it's gonna be an interesting year to see all over the place.
Yeah, definitely.
You got anything else or
no?
All right, I think that's it. Thank you guys for tuning in to KBPS on PRP. This was Redding and Kayvon. Peace.
Hi, my name is Devon Ferrajaro of the KBPS student staff, and you're tuned to Portland Radio Project. The gray waters off of Rotterdam's port do not contain enormous Lego bricks, although they may look like them. Rather, they are a part of a new seawall that also serves as a home for marine life. A sort of fake shellfish reef to assist with shielding populaces of mussels, fish, and scavengers, and different creatures, the blocks are professed to be the primary counterfeit arrangement that really upgrades biodiversity. They are also sufficiently durable to keep seaward indigestion of the seabeds from waves, and sufficiently able to disturb approaching tempests. In nature, coral reefs can absorb 97% of a storm surge's energy, preventing erosion of the seafloor and terrestrial ecosystem above, as well as being able to be a beautiful wonderland. Consistently, on Malaysia's Pearian Islands, stormy season storms are kept from harming the island's backwoods and designed by their rich coral reefs. They made this to make the wildlife more diverse, but unknowingly, the creators of these walls made them look like Lego bricks. Whether it was on purpose or not, this is a beautiful sight to see near the Rotterdam Islands. This has been Giovanna Ferrajaro of the KBPS student staff, and you're tuned to the Portland Radio Project.
Hey, this is Jay from KBPS checking in for PRP for this week. For this week, my song of the week is X Factor by Lauryn Hill. For it being Poetry Month, I'm doing her whole album for the next couple weeks based off the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. This song has won multiple awards. It won in the 2000 Soul Train Music Awards. It's won in Iceland, UK, all of that. I think you guys are going to enjoy this song. It's one of my favorites. Again, X Factor by Lauryn Hill. Tell me who I have been.
curiosity. See, no one loves you more than me, and no one ever will.
Yeah.
Is this just a silly game that forces you to act this way? Forces you to scream my name. Then pretend that you can't stay.
Hello, this is Oscar.
Ariana.
Owen.
And Redding.
Live on KBPS 1450 PRP. So, Ariana, how was the concert like?
It was really good. The sounding and the performances that she had, and Omar Apollo in the beginning. It was a really good concert. It was really...
A lot of females there? Or is it
Yes,
just like...
it was both genders, and it was just a lot of... It was a lot of loud behavior, let's say.
Was it really packed? Because I know SZA is a really big artist, and her coming to the Moda Center, I think tickets will be sold out, right?
There was some spaces at the very, very top that it was packed, but it wasn't that packed when Omar was performing. But I think it was packed towards when SZA came out, which she came out like around like 9:30, and Omar had started exactly at 8.
Did SZA take a long time to get prepared and like start to sing? Because I know when I went to a concert with Trippie, it took a long time to get ready and stuff. So did SZA take a long time?
Yeah, she actually pushed it back an hour because the doors were supposed to open at 6, but we weren't let in until 7. So that's why she had to start at 9. But she did push it back, so.
I also noticed you got some SZA merch. So talk to me about that. How many was it? Was the SZA merch line really long, or did you have to wait a long time, or what was going on there?
The line wasn't that long since we were at the very front of the line. But once like we got the merch and we went to go get like water or food, it was packed. It was like going towards like the middle, like the two lines that were really far away from each other. They were going towards each other. But yeah.
All right. And Owen, how do you feel about SZA?
Yeah, I love SZA. And, you know, I would expect the Moda Center to be packed with SZA's recent album that she recently released. Super good album, so you know, coming off of that, I would expect that she'd get a huge influx of new fans and old fans alike.
All right, Redding, how about you? How do you feel about SZA?
You know, I don't listen to much SZA, but when my sister came to me talking about an extra ticket, I thought, you know, why not give it a chance and show up, see what it's like, and she performs well. For a first time listener, it wasn't bad. I'll say that it was good. I enjoyed her music. So yeah, that's really about it for me.
All right, and Ariana, what would you rate the album? 0 out of 10.
Her new album?
Yep.
I would rate it a 10 out of 10.
No flaws, no nothing. Every song and every track is perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Owen? What's your rating on it?
10.
Oh my God, 2 for 2. All right. What about you, Redding?
I'll have to give an 8.5.
8.5. Ooh.
Again, first time listener. Not much of my style of music, but it's still good, so 8.5.
Okay.
What would you give her new album, Oscar?
Like a 7. That was above my expectations, but I like some of them, but I'm not really into that type of music. I usually just listen to old school things now. My music taste has changed a little bit. Yeah, so this has been Oscar,
Ariana,
Owen,
and of course Redding
on KBPS PRP signing off.
Promises, but they always break. You won't make too many promises.
Hello, I'm Chloe with KBPS, and this is going to be a short segment on cars. So, I thought I'd tell a little story about me and my cousin, since we are, you know, very close and we hang out all the time. We're both into cars, of course. But this weekend, we were working on his car. He has a wheel bearing that broke in his car and needed to be replaced. So we were working on it. And this is just what I love. Or I don't love it, of course. No one does. But it's just like, you know, the magic of cars. Especially, this is also showing something that's kind of irritating when you're working on cars. People don't really know a lot. Well, like, they do, but they don't. It's a little hard to explain, but I'll explain it here. So, we were working on the car, and it, you know, doing the wheel bearing, found out more parts broke on it. So, great. You know, there's more we had to do. We had to replace, I don't even remember, because if I'm being 100% honest, most of what we were doing was our own cars, because I was working on my car myself, but it was more like maintenance instead of like stuff like that where it really needed to be done. Like I was just doing oil change, coolant, flush, you know, casual stuff you need to do with your car. But when he was doing his, I don't remember what it was. I cannot think of it right now. I think it's a control arm or something. I don't remember the name because I'm an idiot, but it you know, needed to be replaced because it was broken, and he had to go get a replacement. And from whatever what it costed to get the wheel bearing, which was already like, I think it was, I don't even know how much it was. He has a G35 though. I'm gonna say probably like $50, $25, something like that, to replace both like the front ones, plus the control arms, which was another like $100-$200 or something for both the front ones, because you know, might as well replace them both at the same time. That ended up costing so much more and having so much more time. It took him a couple days to do it because he's never done it before. And, you know, it's difficult to do a wheel bearing. I don't know if you knew that. But, you know, like there's a, things you need to get fixed. And his mom was so mad, bruh. Like, that's the thing about cars. It's hard, in my opinion, because I have to do that stuff all the time. And when it comes to my cars, they break all the time or something new. Like with the red car, you know, there was like, it was just two things that were wrong and ended up being like eight, and it was super expensive. But that's what makes it difficult for someone like his mother, who, you know, gets pissed when you know, car doesn't work because it's broken, and they're like, not messing with the car, you know, your car, you're messing with it and breaking it. Like, that's what some people don't understand, which hopefully, you know, someone who's listening who doesn't understand that. Cars break. There's new stuff. There's like secrets, you know. It's like a, you know, mystery surprise when it comes to working on a car. Or something will break when you're trying to fix something else. Especially like if you have a kid or something who's into cars, or someone you know who's into cars, and you're always like, you know, yelling at them about it. That's not really their fault that that happens. It's just a car thing. It happens to everyone when they're working on cars. It's pretty normal. Especially when replacing a part, which is really annoying. But it's just pretty normal. Especially on like a car like that's kind of old and it's kind of a piece of crap. It's just, you know, or project, you know, it's just normal, which is kind of like something that I wanted to talk about on here, because it pisses me off whenever my mom yells at me about that stuff, and you know, makes my cousin angry as well, because it's annoying. It's so hard to explain that it's not our fault. I mean, it is, but it's not. Like, it's normal. It's like saying, like, getting mad at someone for breathing, like, bruh. You know, it's pretty normal, bud. But yeah, thought I'd hop on here and talk about that, as well as the fact that the car is finally working. Woo! The G35, at least. We got the wheel bearing replaced, actually, which I guess should be the good part about this. We got it replaced. We replaced everything that needed to be replaced on it, and it is running well now. It does not make any weird noises when we start it now, because it was squeaking a lot, which maybe I should have made this on the G35. I don't think I've ever explained this before. But it used to, the belt used to squeak because you'd run, it would run against the block, which is pretty normal on G35s, 350Zs, all that. So he fixed that. I don't know what he did. I didn't ask. But, and he finally got plates, bro. That's the big one. He got plates for it. He hasn't had plates for since he bought it, which was like 6 months ago, which, you know, legal, especially where he lives. He doesn't live around, you know, Portland. He lives in Jefferson, where, you know, cops actually care. About that kind of stuff a bit more than people around Portland police do, since it's a bit more lenient, I guess. That makes, I don't know, it's hard to explain. I don't really want to get into it because I don't, it's not allowed on the radio. But yeah, so the GE is finally working, and hopefully we can sell it soon, because that thing's kind of a piece of junk, and I'm trying to convince him to get an RSX, and I think he's buying into it finally. So we're going to check out a couple of RSXs this weekend, and I hope everyone else who's listening to this has a good weekend.
If you'd like to support KBPS on PRP, please consider donating to Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like KBPS on PRP stay on the air. For more information, go to PRP.fm and click the big red heart. KBPS on PRP, the new student show airing on Portland Radio Project, featuring Benson High School KBPS radio students. On air since 1923, KBPS is the radio station located at Benson High School. Staffed by students while they learn about the communications and broadcast industry. Streaming 24/7 at www.kbps.am or 1450 on your AM dial. KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Portland Radio Project is your nonprofit community radio station, closely tuned into Portland. On the dial at 99.1 FM in the heart of Portland, and streaming worldwide from any computer at prp.fm. This concludes our show for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Joe Anderson. And this has been an hour with KBPS on PRP.